Bren Foster, hi, how you doing, and welcome to Upcoming Dis.
Thanks, hi Gina, how are you?
I'm doing okay, just watched your movie Force of Execution just last night, so fresh in my mind.
Oh, beautiful.
Hey, it was a lot of fun. I gotta tell you though, looking at your career, it seems like it's been this mix of martial arts and acting, of course, and the first question I have to ask for you, looking at your career, how does a martial artist end up on a soap opera for so long?
I get on a bit, don't I? Well, the thing was, one thing I did learn from martial arts, if I wanted to do something, I had to put the hours and the time into studying it. So when I was in Australia, I went to the University of Western Sydney, which was also known that the degree was the theory of acting. So I spent 3 years studying as a classical actor, doing 40 to 50 hours a week. So I think even my early career in Australia, there was no martial arts involved. It was pretty much just straight acting. And then I did a bit of a documentary over in the States for National Geographic Channel called Fight Science, and then had an audition for Days of Our Lives and landed on there for a while. So, it's kind of a bit of a mix of a career, but it was, I love my time on Days of Our Lives. I love it when I just do something dramatic, and even more so, I love it when I get to actually put the martial arts and the drama together, which was the blessing I received in Force of Execution.
Well, and the martial arts, you've got some championships under your belt, don't you?
Yeah, I've been doing it for a long, long time. Kind of saw the world through martial arts. I fought from Taekwondo to Muay Thai to kickboxing to full contact karate, to no-gi jiu-jitsu. So I've kind of jumped into all different areas and many, many different styles. Mm-hmm. And I was quite young. I think at 16 I was a national team member going international to fight.
Wow.
It's been the martial arts. It's been a huge part of my life, educating me in more than one way. But that's just something I'm super grateful for. But as I was saying, the opportunity to actually bring two passions in my life, the acting and the martial arts together, was just, I had a ball doing Force of Execution.
Yeah, and when you want to combine those two, I mean, when you're talking about working with Steven Seagal, how many years in the business that he's combined both the martial arts and the acting, it's got to be quite a thrill to do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I used to remember when I was a kid, I used to, I was at the cinema, I was quite young, and I think my brother-in-law took me to watch Under Siege at the cinema, so I'm familiar with all of Steven's movies, Out for Justice, Hard to Kill. So as a huge fan, as a kid, and now to be working alongside him, it's an honor, it's kind of a little bit surreal, but it's, as I've become my own man, it's fantastic to be amongst these guys.
Yeah, and Force of Execution is actually your second project, both with Steven and with Waxman, the director, correct?
Yeah. I mean, Keone's great. I think he's a wonderful director. He's a super nice guy. And Steven's just Steven's a legend in the action genre, in the action films. Everyone knows who Steven Seagal is, of course. So, I had a great time. And, I'm hoping to work with Keone again. And, I got, good experiences to draw back from working with Steven and Keone.
What kind of, did you do any specific training for Force of Execution? Was there something you had to brush up on? Was there a particular regiment you put yourself through before starting the role?
I'm always training pretty hard. I mean, I never let my training lapse. I think my martial arts training is something that's just part of my life and that I have to always do and study. But yes, I did. I started training with Ron Balicki. Dan Inosato's one of his top students, and I kind of brushed up a lot of my knife stuff, so that particular knife fight you see in the desert,
yes,
that was a lot longer, but I think because of time constraints in the film that it kind of got edited down a bit, but me and Ron went really hard at a lot of knife stuff, and Ron's just a beast with the blade in his hand, so yeah. We got some really cool fight stuff going with the blade, so that was the extra training I did, training with Ron, and we've become really good friends since, and we're actually continuing to train together, and hopefully we'll be doing some more fights together, stuff together in some upcoming films. But that was there in addition to all my other training, the martial arts, the Muay Thai, the Taekwondo, a bit of acrobatic stuff, the Filipino arts, and Ron's kind of system.
Now that's a lot of the knife fighting stuff, isn't that come from a lot of the Philippine stuff?
Yeah, all the Indonesian, the Penjat Salat, and the Arnese Kali stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where all that came from.
Well, now let's talk a little bit about Roman Hirst, your character in Force of Execution. course, he's a hitman. He's given a job. The job goes badly. We don't give a whole lot away, but the job goes badly, and he ends up in this downward spiral, and ends up in kind of a way, it becomes almost his story of redemption. Is that how you would look at it?
Yeah, I mean, he finds, in life, I guess, it's a common occurrence. I mean, financially or family-wise, people can mess up, and they can hit rock bottom, and although it wasn't his fault, and he was kind of set
right.
up, Hurst found himself, pretty low. I mean, hands taken away from him.
Right.
And, down and out, and, somehow he, there was also on the verge of suicide, so.
Yes.
Won't give too much away, but he found his way back. I mean, with the help of people who are surrounding yourself with good people, in life, if we surround ourselves with good people, we can generally find our way back, and I think Roman's journey, he was fortunate enough to have a few good people around him, and that enabled him to come back better than ever.
In Seagal's opening narration, and of course throughout the film, we really get this idea that the two of them have been very close, had worked together for a long time. And even though we didn't get to see, the early part played out, did you build a kind of backstory? Did you kind of decide, what those years were like between your two characters before you got to the stage?
Absolutely. And to me, I don't mind revealing a little bit of my backstory, but we were on a special forces team together, and
right.
I was shot and left for dead, and he came back for me.
Okay.
He harried me, my thing to make this real and make my loyalty, so strong to him.
Sure.
He carried me, 50 miles to safety on his back while I was bleeding. So, and ever since then, ever since we got back, Hurst and Alexander got back from where their mission was, I've been totally loyal to Alexander.
Yeah.
And that's primarily the reason. I owe my life to him, and that's a small part of the backstory. There is a lot more, but I think that's enough.
What you should take some pride in too is that there are some great performers in this movie. There are some great performances, but you know what? The characters were very much kind of. I don't want to use the word cliche, but the characters were very much very standardized characters in their actions, with the exception of Roman. Roman's the only one in this movie that appeared to go on an emotional journey. I mean, everybody else had their own journeys. Ving Rhames trying to take over the outfit, and Seagal trying to, figure out what he's doing. But it seemed to me that your character's the only one who actually went on a more human emotional journey rather than just the action and whatever the thing of the moment was.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that appealed to me, and I know some people may find it strange or thing, but is actually he had to overcome something physically.
Right.
So by having his hands taken away, it was like a whole readjustment of life. Him holding a phone, making him having to, like you might see him having to kick the bag a few times before he
right.
had the phone. And a lot of his fighting style, when he hasn't got the hands, is
well, he is a hitman who can't
elbows.
Yeah, he's a hitman who can't hold a gun.
Exactly.
At that point.
I can't, like, bend the fingers. So
yeah.
I'm my fighting style, I'm kicking and using a lot of elbows in the early fights when the hands are taken. So everything kind of catered towards that. And there's also a little bit of disappointment and, like, a struggle for me. It's like my boss has let them break my hands.
Right.
Yeah, and then I've still got this kind of, I don't want to cuss, but messed up kind of loyalty towards him. And it's kind of that, it's that struggle. It's like, hey, you let them take my hands, but why do I still feel like I'm indebted to you?
Well, but of course they wanted to kill him.
Yeah, exactly.
So
they didn't let them kill me, but
yeah,
it almost resulted in me wanting to kill myself.
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Now, I tell you something. You've probably been asked this 1,000 times already today. I got to ask you about the Scorpions. have to ask you about the Scorpions.
To ask me about that.
Nobody's asked you about the Scorpions?
Nobody's asked me about the Scorpions.
How can I not ask you about the Scorpions, man? First of all, were they real?
Well, the black one,
yeah,
was real, and they put that on my hand. the yellowish kind of
right.
bony-colored one,
uh-huh.
that was real, and that was there, but they didn't allow that one to actually touch my hand because that one was kind of really poisonous. Because
that one was dangerous.
But the black one was crawling all over me.
Didn't sting you, of course.
No, thank goodness, yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, it was one of the coolest parts of the movie, but I have to say, too, a little incredulous. I didn't realize that scorpion venom could actually make bones heal almost instantly because
yeah,
he
know.
Gets his mojo right back.
That's a Mexican witch doctor secret, mate. So,
Well, that's true. And then, of course, we already talked about working with Steven, but then Danny Trejo, who you know, has had some pretty good success with himself, so the Machete movies, finally getting some of the dude, you know, that he's earned over the years. Must have been a joy to work with him, because he seems just like such a fun guy to be around.
Oh, Danny, he's awesome. He's great. He's so friendly. He's so funny. I mean, I remember we'd sit down and we'd eat together, and he's got some good jokes. He's such a friendly, kind-hearted person. And yeah, and I remember him as a kid too, believe it or not.
Really? Yeah.
You know, and then I'm, you know, sitting down talking to him, and he's just he's great to have a conversation with, and he's just such a jovial person. He's just got such a big heart. My niece and had some family out there too, and he was just welcoming, you know, had some photos with them, and yeah, he's such a lovely person. I can't say enough good things about that guy.
Yeah, and you know, it's a guy who paid his dues for a long time, playing just a background heavy for a long time until he got the chance to really shine.
Oh, mate, he deserves it. He deserves the success that comes his way, and he's so grateful for it, and he does a lot of charity stuff, and he gives back when he can.
Yeah.
He's just such a good person, mate, and it was an absolute honor working alongside him.
And, of course, Ving Rhames, also in this movie, he plays kind of the rival gangster, what have you. And that there's a guy who's, is he that much larger in life in person as he is on screen? He's always larger than life. He just takes up the whole screen.
Yeah, Ving's pretty cool. I mean, most of the time when I would come into contact with him, we had like some confrontational scenes.
Right.
And there's one in particular where, you know, because he walks in and he goes, "That's enough of that Bruce Lee crap."
Yes.
Moment, we're just staring at each other, and I was like, I forgot that we were in a movie, and I felt like we just wanted to kill each other.
Yeah,
within the circumstances of the scene, of course. But yeah, no, Ving was great until I just remember his last day, and he rapped, and then it was just like he dropped the whole Iceman persona, and
right.
He came up and, you know, give me a high five and just, you know, said, "Keep up the great work." And we had a little chat, and you know, I thanked him, and he thanked me. That was it. It was great. But yeah, fine actor. He when he would step on set, I mean, even just that moment when you're just opposite him and you're looking at each other, he brings the whole scene up. He elevates everyone around him, you know. And even I felt it, you know, just with the eye contact exchange, like across from him, I just, you know, within the scene, I just could feel the growl inside me, just, you know, wanting to get at him. But that was because what he was bringing into the scene, and it helped me respond accordingly and respond naturally to within the given circumstances.
Well,
he was another one fantastic actor to work alongside.
Yeah, a lot of presence. Like I said, when he's on screen, he kind of dominates whatever's going on around him. It's you don't look anywhere else. He demands that attention be right there in what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't know this, but he's a Juilliard graduate.
I didn't know that.
He comes out of one of the top drama schools in the United States. He's got a tremendous voice too. I mean,
yes,
his presence physically, but when he speaks, he's just got that deep, resonant voice.
And, yes, he does.
A lot of actors take their voices for granted, but it's voice is very important, and he's just got such a commanding voice. And as you say, yeah, as soon as he walks in, he just commands so much presence. But he's a wonderful actor.
Well, and speaking of voice, one thing I noticed about your character here is your character is very soft-spoken. He doesn't really have a lot of dialogue throughout this film. When you look at it, he kind of, in the beginning when he's doing his job, he kind of does his business, and even when he's suffering, he's kind of suffering in silence for the most part. You see it through your actions, not really through a lot of dialogue. Was that difficult?
No, that's sometimes some of the things I actually look for is a lot of actors. So worried about their lines, if their line gets cut,
sure,
this and that. But what they don't realize, they have to look beyond the lines, because an ounce of physical behavior says 1,000 words.
Yes.
And too many times actors get hung up on lines, and I think it's more about human behavior, and I think that says more than words sometimes. So it was absolutely fine with me when I looked through the script, but because there was a lot of moments, being alone in the room with the suicide attempt and stuff. And that's the kind of stuff that can grab me sometimes, because I'm like, behavior. And that's what will appeal to me sometimes, more so than the dialogue. So for me, it was absolutely fine, mate.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It worked for me.
he really went on an emotional journey. In fact, at times it seemed like there was much of the movie that was told from his point of view, and then times it wasn't. I kind of was looking that I think it might have been better if the entire movie was almost from his point of view, that it was the way he was looking at things, because when we were seeing things from his point of view, there was a lot more emotion in the film.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I kind of tried to invest everything I could in it, and some parallels from my own personal life in there. But well, thank you, mate.
Well, no, it's honest. It's a good performance. Now, I know that Steven Seagal is very very famous for liking the improv, particularly the fights and stuff like that. I assume he did a lot of that on this film. Was that hard for you to keep up with, or did you guys have a good shorthand?
No, I'm totally cool with that. I think Steven just likes it's like a tennis match, and yeah, he does like to improvise and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And I think if you're just there and you're really listening and you're ready to hit the ball back when it comes your way, okay, you know. But it kind of keeps things in the moment, because sometimes in acting, when it's just like dialogue, and everyone knows it by rote, and there's no personal investment in
right.
it, it kind of dies. But sometimes, I mean, if you've got someone opposite you that's kind of just going to throw a curveball at you,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to make you go, whoa, when you've got to try and hit it back, sometimes that's when you can kind of get something interesting happening, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So where was it shot? Where were you guys on location? Because there's some beautiful exterior stuff, this like desert area.
We're in New Mexico.
Okay, so you were at the place that was actually set then?
Yeah, we're in New Mexico, which was cool for me because it was the first time I had been there. And, it snowed too, believe it or not. So I think we were there for about a week, and then the snow started falling down.
No
kidding.
So
there was some, as you can imagine, some freezing moments, because you can see sometimes I'm wearing a tank, and I forget the scorpion scene, to bring that up again. I was bloody cold, mate. I was
I am just so surprised that that no one brought up the scorpion scene. I just I'm just like, because it's obvious that they looked real, and I know in the extras, Danny talks a little bit about, you know, how they let him do it with the tweezers, but he wasn't allowed to touch him. But we didn't hear about your interaction with them, because they're like on your hand. I mean, he gets a hold of the tweezers, they're crawling around your arm. Well, maybe that was good. I assume you didn't get stung by the black one.
No, it was all fine. We had a scorpion wrangler there, too, so he was watching over and ensuring everything was quite safe, so it was pretty cool.
Yeah, you just don't want to hear him go, oops. So what's next up for you, now that Force of Execution's out there on Blu-ray, releasing this Tuesday? So what's next for you on the list of things?
Well, I'm currently in Sydney. I'm doing a film called Infernai, which is a sci-fi thriller, which no martial arts or really.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of a cross between 28 Days Later and Aliens. So it's that will be. I'm wrapping on that. That's been going for about 8 weeks. I wrap on that on Tuesday of next week, and then I go straight into the second Australian film on the Wednesday called Terminus.
Yeah.
And Terminus is it's like a drama with a small sci-fi element in that too. Some two Australian films at the moment, kind of a little bit more working on the dramatic side of things, but as soon as I get back to the States, I'm sure something, without saying too much or revealing anything, there's a
right.
little action kind of flick coming in the works over there, so hopefully that will get kicked off in February.
Good deal. Well, yeah, and especially you're talking about Australia, I guess I shouldn't have asked you about the scorpion, because you're Australia, you're used to venomous things all around you all the time, aren't you?
Oh, mate, we've got brown snakes in the backyard, we've got funnel webs in the drain pipes, we've got everything that would kill you over here.
It's those funnel webs that would have me worried. The snakes, I like snakes, but those funnel webs, man, those things would have me shaking. I'd be watching my boots every night.
Uh-huh, funnel webs are crazy. You really got to watch out for them.
Yeah, I'll bet. Well, anyway, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about it. I enjoyed the film, and I hope we get a chance to talk to you down the road on another one.
Oh, that would be a pleasure, mate. Thank you for your time, too.
Well, listen, no, thank you, and have yourself a good holiday season coming up.
Right back at you, mate.
All right. You take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.